House Joint Education Committee meeting to order Friday, February 23, 2018. Time is 8:02 a.m. In attendance are myself, Senator Stevens, Senator Giesel, Senator Hughes, and President Grumman, if you call your roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have Representative Johnston, Representative Talrico, and myself. Representative Drummond and Representative Sponholz is absent this morning, and I expect others to join us in short order. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Cargill and Senator Begich have other commitments. They can't be here this morning, but I know a few will show up soon. We're going to be hearing today from the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, regarding some of their research activities, specifically a presentation on the power of research. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We have Dr. Larry Heinzman, Dr. Peter Webley, and Dr. George Rowe as well. So please introduce yourselves. And
thank you very much. Chair Drummond, Chair Stevens, thank you very much for having us, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Larry Heinzman. I'm the Vice Chancellor for Research at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. I'm also the, President Johnson started our strategic pathways effort, he created several councils, and one of which is the Research Council. And so I'm also the chair of the Research Council, which spreads across all of our campuses. And so I can speak for the research at all three campuses. We're trying to expand and grow our research the best we can everywhere across the state. I'm also the vice president of the International Arctic Science Committee, and I'm the vice chair of the Sustaining Arctic Observations, which is another international group. I've been involved in research since I left my parents' home when I was 17. I worked my way through college on research projects, and I've had worked continuously on research efforts ever since then. So this is research has been my life, and I hope to continue that for a while. So.
Thank you, Dr. Heinzman. We also have with us Representative Cott. Please go ahead.
And Representative Parrish is joining us. There we go.
So today we're going to talk about the value of research to the state of Alaska. I have three main points. One is that research is important to the Alaskan industry. Research is an industry for the state of Alaska, and its research is really highly relevant to Alaska. We take on practical issues. We resolve important problems to the state, and that research and innovation is important to drive the economy, drive the diversification of our economy, and that investment in education will drive Alaska's economy. So I will go through the first part of our slides, then I'm going to turn it over to Peter when we talk about commercialization. But please, if there's any questions throughout, don't hesitate to stop me. So this I am advocating for the Board of Regents request for the $341 million request for research. We have a portion of that budget request is $3.7 million, which is to grow our world-class research, and that's distributed across the three campuses, the three MOUs. We're conducting thousands of research projects, and there's no way I can possibly touch even a proportion of them, so I'm just going to give a overview of some of the research activities. So since fiscal year 2010, research at the University of Alaska has generated over $1 billion in direct economic input to the state. That's direct money coming in that's buying supplies, paying salaries, and that money is reverberating throughout the economy, is paying mortgages, buying groceries, paying for gas. And so it does support a very large proportion of our employees, so it creates a lot of good jobs. That $1 billion has a big impact on the state, but it's a drop in the bucket compared to the recycled impacts or the residual impacts of the other benefits that come from research. And Peter will talk more about that. So I mentioned that research is an important industry. So last year alone, UA had over $148 million in external research expenditures. We count expenditures. We don't count income. We count how much we've spent each year, because we can have a beginning point and an end point. We can compare ourselves to other universities across the nation. And so it's a real good measure to see how we're doing. And so research is doing well. We're bringing in a lot of money. We're solving really important problems. The state provided $24 million in research funding. And of that $24 million, you can see we increased it by six. So that doesn't diminish the importance of that $24 million. I can't expect people to write research proposals or to gather the information they need to draw in that other $148 million if they don't have the basic funds to create the research programs. And so that base funding is critically important to maintain the research enterprise. Of those $148 million, $90 million was in direct wages and salaries, which is about 1,250 jobs. And then another $27 million provided indirect income, so 350 other jobs from the multiplier effects. And then $70 million in purchases and contract services. But all this doesn't really count the multiplier of that money that's recycled around the economy and how it does reverberate before it leaves the state. So we keep talking about the return on investment. So this year, last year in 2017, fiscal year 17, we had a return on investment of 6.2, so $6.2 return for every dollar invested. And it varies year to year and from institute to institute, depending on the type of research that's being done and just the economy and the situation. So last year was about 4.0, and in past years it's been 5 and 4. Some institutes actually have as good as 10 to 1 return, and so it really, really depends. But that money, again, like I said, that initial $1 investment is hugely important to create the economy that we can maintain our research portfolio. So I've tailored some of these slides specifically to look at education because I know that's your primary concern. So the research and quality education are completely integrated. So the research opportunities really attract the outstanding faculty. Many of our faculty who have come to the University of Alaska came here because of the research, the confluence of research expertise, the people that they could collaborate with, the facilities that we have, and the opportunities that we offer. And research is also integral to developing a strong curriculum. Our faculty who get the highest teaching reviews or the annual evaluations from the students, those faculty who get the highest reviews are those who are strongly engaged in research because they're offering the latest technology, the most advanced in the science, and the students really like that. And it's really important for their education and their training to go out into the world. We also, as well as attracting the top faculty, the research enterprise also attracts the best students. We bring in really great students from around the world. Many of them come to Alaska and stay, and so it really does help expand our workforce. And so there's many, many benefits. We could talk about that. And also the research, the undergrad students and the graduate students are just central to our research activities, and research is central to the education. So about 40% of our, in Fairbanks, about 40% of our undergraduate students actually do participate in research. And we have several programs, and I'll talk about some of those. And they also are strongly engaged in the publications. So the University of Alaska produces more publications. The Arctic is just one of our strengths, but the University of Alaska produces more publications on the Arctic than any other institution in the world. So any institution across the United States, that includes all of the Russian Academy of Sciences, which is hundreds of different institutes, but we produce the most publications, and we also produce the most citations, which is essentially an evaluation of the quality of those publications. And of those publications, about 40% of them include some student, an undergraduate or a graduate student. So education, research, training, teaching, they're all integrated. And so the researchers have to see this as an integrated whole, as a holistic part of their role, their contributions to education. The students are a strong part of the research program. They provide input with ideas and execution, and that information is translated to the state and to the nation, and the students are also a strong part of that. And so, again, that's another really important benefit to the state of Alaska. One of the greatest values, I think, of having students engaged in research is teaching them to think and teaching them to be creative and teaching them to make things work. On any research project, you can never go to the field and have everything you need. You can never know what you're going to expect. And I think that engaging students in research really teaches them how to think, how to be responsive. I mean, one of the highest compliments I ever received was once when I took a student to the field. And at the end, he said that spending a day in the field is like watching 24 episodes of MacGyver. And so it really does you can never have everything you need. You've got to be, the most successful researchers are the ones who can take what they've got and make it work. And that's a good lesson for students, I think. So I'm going to just tell you about a few of our students and their engagement in research and what the impact of that is to Alaska. So we have a program called URSA, which was started about 2012, which is just dedicated to giving students research opportunities. We provide small grants, about $2,000 apiece, to students and let them engage in research. So Ruth Osborne was involved in a project that used photolysis of organic matter in water to break it down. You may have heard in the newspapers about all the problems that we have in Alaska when we treat highly organic waters with chlorine, which chlorine is a typical process for making drinking water safe. But when you have highly organic waters and you treat it with chlorine, it sometimes can create carcinogenic materials. And so we have to find a different way of treating the organics to break down the organics in the water before we treat it with chlorine to get rid of the bacteria. And so this is an important project, and it makes a difference for Alaska. Luke Rogers has worked on captive bison, and so that's an important project that we worked on closely with fishing game. And so it was an important project for Alaska. It was an important project for fishing game. But also, it really brought a lot of great students. You know, students look at this, and they see Mutual of Omaha, and they come to Alaska to help us work on this. And so it's been really, really good. It also plays a big role in helping us keep our students in Alaska. We give our students great opportunities. They come here, they see what they can do, they understand their capabilities and their interest, and it really keeps the best and the brightest here in Alaska. But I also want to point out that we also support other scholarly activity. So this URSA program also provides opportunities for art students to work with great instructors or to travel to performances. BLAST is a program that we started several years ago, too. BLAST is a program to help us get more students into biomedical fields. And so we work across the state. UAS is also a strong partner in this. We work across the state with institutions, with community colleges, to identify students who have an interest in biomedical activities, and we bring them into research programs at a very young age, and we show them that they have the capabilities and help them develop their interest really helped us to smooth their transition into the university life. We were just reviewed just 2 days ago by the National Institute of Health, and the reviews were glowing. And so I'm really, really proud of this program, proud of the activities, proud of the accomplishments, and I'm proud to see that it's very likely to continue on into the future. So I've mentioned many times that graduate students are central to research. They do play a big role. They bring ideas, they bring enthusiasm and engagement. They do conduct much of the work. But this training is really good for the state in that these students are trained in the latest techniques, they use the latest equipment, they come out with a strength and a confidence and an understanding that does benefit our local industries. And I think that many of you who know the students who have gone through these research programs can testify that they do indeed come out stronger and more capable, and they do have a really strong contribution to the state of Alaska afterwards. So I'm going to just talk a little bit about a couple of these projects. So Tilo Klenz conducted a research project where he looked at drifting buoys in the North Pacific and the Bering Sea, and he quantified and used these buoys to validate models, and these models of ocean circulation is really important as far as people think that the flow through the Bering Strait goes from south to north all the time, but it doesn't. There's many other drivers. Sometimes it turns back and goes back to the south. And characterizing that flow is really important as far as if we want to have any predictions on ocean acidification, we've got to know how the waters are mixing. If we want to know about predictions on where the fish are likely to be, we've got to understand the ocean water dynamics. And these models are used around the North Pacific in the Gulf of Alaska, and we're using them more in the Arctic Ocean to quantify sea ice dynamics. And so it's really, really important work for the state of Alaska and for the nation. Stanley Edwin is a Gwich'in student from Fort Yukon, and he has got his BS in physics from the University of Alaska, and then he went on to get his PhD on simulating cloud formation dynamics. There's a huge variation in clouds, And trying to predict those, the dynamics and the formation mechanisms of those is incredibly difficult. And so this is a hugely challenging problem. And Stanley has done a wonderful job in predicting formation of lenticular clouds. And lenticular clouds, you may remember, are very important for pilots as far as where they give an indication of downdraft winds over mountains. And so he's done a really great job with that. And we've done some wonderful work. This particular slide shows a lot of the geologic work that we've done. So this slide shows some of the, this is just related to the theses, the master's and PhD theses that have come out of these areas. And you can see that many of these are related to gold and other mineral mines. Some of these are related to geothermal springs, and some are related to gas and oil. And so some of the work that was done here, these are PhD theses, master's theses. Some of the work that was done here was actually done before the mine or the geothermal springs were developed, and some were done afterwards. But in any cases, when they're done before the development, they do help in the development of those resources. But when they're done in the post-analysis, then it helps us characterize what the processes were that actually drove those the formation of those processes or those properties or resources. Why are they there, and how can we use that information to extrapolate our understanding to other regions to identify other places where those resources may be present? But again, it's been very valuable resources and again, incredibly important to the state of Alaska. Now I'm going to turn it over to Peter, and Peter's going to talk a little bit more about our commercialization of some of the research.
Thank you, Dr. Heisman. And if you could introduce yourself, please.
Thank you, Larry. My name is Dr. Peter Webley. I'm a research faculty member at the University of Alaska. I'm also an ambassador of our intellectual property office. I'm also a small business owner in the state of Alaska, and I'll give you a little overview of how we formed that company, developed out of university research. So the focus here is on the 1.6 million part of the contribution from the Board of Regents budget, and Larry mentioned that the $1 billion that has come from since FY10. I think the commercial potential from the university developed research is astronomically larger than that. The ability to get in licensing fees, to be able to transfer technology out of the university environment, and to grow new companies and to bring companies to come and work with Alaskans and and build the economy. So as an ambassador of the Office of Intellectual Property, I connect with it's the tech transfer office of the university. And the idea is to take research projects and move them into the commercial market. These could be startup companies directly from academics at the university, students and staff, or to work with an existing company to commercialize that work. And the aim of the office is to generate a culture of innovation at the university, to take those research ideas and move them forward. And the aim of that is then to be able to diversify our economy, to take those funded research projects and develop a capability to bring additional funding into the state, and to employ students and to employ people in the state of Alaska. And I actually moved, as you can guess from my accent, I'm a transplant, and I actually came to Alaska in 2005 to be one of those researchers. I came as a postdoctoral research scientist, and I thought, I'm going to stay for 2 years and go back to the UK, maybe become an academic there and start teaching. And Alaska grew on me. And 12 years, nearly 13 years later, I'm still here. And I'm forming a company, and I formed a company. So research brings people here. Research keeps people here. So some of the things that we've done in the last year and starting this year is we're starting up something called a Lean Launch Workshop. And this is an approach of how to take an idea and form it into a company. It's the new approach of launching companies, where you go from the small idea that you bring to the table at the beginning of the event. 3 days later, you could have a company. 2 days later, you could have a company. And you go through all the different steps of that company formation. What's the market? What's the value proposition? Who are you going to work with? How are you going to take it out of a university environment? Who's your team going to be? Is your team going to change? Are you going to have to start with one idea, and at the end of 2 days, your company's pivoted into something different because you found out that's the market, that's the area? And this is a workshop running for 3 days. We've got about 30 people from across the university system coming to Fairbanks. We've got advisors coming in. We have a person coming in from Stanford who helped design this process to teach that in Fairbanks. And this will foster new collaborations that can lead to new companies. We've also started what I call the Innovation Initiative. This is more of a internal to the university system at the moment, but it's more of a place to come and just talk about innovation and new ideas. So hang out, have a discussion, ask some questions, new people can come in. We've had 30 to 40 people just turn up just to learn about how they can become entrepreneurs in the university system. And I'll actually be presenting on my company and my story to that group next week. And they can learn from what I've done, so they themselves can move forward and understand the process. And we're looking at developing a new course in the university system based around the process of this workshop, spreading it into an academic-based term, so the students can take it, get credit for that, but also learn how to form a company. Yes, Chair.
Can you explain the Stanford element of it? Is that connected with the university?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. So this is a professor at Stanford who developed the lean launch process. We've connected with him, and he's coming up to teach that and transfer the information to the university, so then university faculty can teach that class, and I'll be one of the co-teachers of that course with another one of our ambassadors. So he's transferring that knowledge to us so we can then teach it in the university environment.
Thank you, Dr. Webb. I have a question. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The workshops and things that you're talking about, those are in Fairbanks. Is there something similar happening in Anchorage? Because this is right up my alley, and I'd love to help promote it, but I'm from South Central, for people to check this kind of thing out. So are we talking Fairbanks for these workshops, or do we have something similar down in Anchorage?
So through the Chair, Representative Hughes, the workshops are in Fairbanks. We actually have people coming up from Anchorage to take the workshop. And then we would look at growing this capability, but we actually have people coming up. We opened it up to the university system, so we actually have people coming from Anchorage, but it's being housed in Fairbanks just because that's where the connection is to the person presenting it.
Quick follow-up comment. So it's worth the drive for those to come up from South Central.
So through the Chair, Representative Hughes, we actually had a selection process. So sadly, the application process has closed, and we actually reviewed all the applicants. So we actually we had more applicants in available space. So we selected them based on their letters of application. So it's closed. It's coming in March. And we were, of the applicants that selected, we do have applicants coming up from Anchorage already. So the actual process for applications has closed.
I would just, in answer to that, yes, there's things going on statewide, and there's similar situations, similar things happening in Anchorage. We just had the Blue Ocean event, and that drew from folks from Fairbanks and down in Anchorage, and then this is the week of the Innovation Summit here in Juneau. So where competition is always good amongst regions, and it's also good to have cooperation. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, through the Chair, if I can respond to Representative Kovai. Yes, this core year of the innovation, where there's different events that go on throughout the whole state. This is one example here. The Lean launch in Fairbanks is one. There's the Otis sprint that just happened in Anchorage. And the aim of it is to foster innovation across the whole state. And and there's times when focused events happen in each district, in each area. Thank you, Chair. So we also have ambassadors. I'm one of them in the university system. And our focus is we're researchers at the university that have gone through this entrepreneurial process before. We can discuss with new students and faculty and staff who are interested in entrepreneurialism and give them advice. Say, is your idea at the stage to transfer out of the university? Some people will say, I've got this great project, and you're like, well, hang on a moment, let's step back and say, okay, do you still need to do some research internal to the university, or isn't it an idea that's got commercial potential today? And we can then take those researchers, get them in touch with the office, and help them do an invention disclosure and transfer that technology out. But we can act as advice to the faculty, staff, and students, given the experience that we've had. So we've been brought on board this last year, And there's also, we've just set up this incubator called Center ICE, Center for Innovation, Commercialization and Entrepreneurship. This is where we're actually going to have companies that are working with the university to commercialize university research, or new startup companies that have come out of the university, where they're going to be housed together. They will be getting access to some services, working with the office, working with the ambassadors themselves, where they can foster new ideas by being in the same space. We had the Innovation Summit just this week, and the presenter said that a lot of these new ideas come from cross disciplines working together, where we're going to have a biological company sitting next to a computer science, sitting next to an electrical engineer. Electrical engineer could help the biologist fix some of their equipment or start a new, spin off a new idea, but by being in the same space, excuse me, they can actually learn from each other and grow and develop new ideas that you don't get from being in disparate offices, even across a university campus. Just being in one space is a dramatic benefit to that. So actually this graphic fits perfectly to Representative Kopp's statement on the statewide innovation events that are going on. You can see here on this graphic many listed parts of the innovation, what we call the innovation pipeline. We have the Otis event that was in Anchorage, startup weekends. These are a 50-hour event where they go through that startup process, but in a much condensed environment. And we're actually, there's going to be one in Juneau next month. There's been one in Fairbanks and in Anchorage. We have Launch Alaska, which is the statewide accelerator based out of Anchorage, and many different aspects of it. And the aim of this is to take the information that's either within a university environment or a citizen and move it through all the way through to a company, and then get collaborations with existing Alaskan companies or bring additional revenue into the state by collaborating with external companies wanting to work with those developed Alaskan companies. So what is my company? What did I build and set up here in the state of Alaska? So I'm a volcano researcher by my academic training, and we've been developing tools to detect and track volcanic ash, both from satellite-based data and forecasting global potential of ash risk for about 15 years. And we were in a federally funded research projects, USGS and NASA and National Science Foundation and others. And some of that support diminished at the end as projects ended. So we had this technology that we developed, and we saw an opportunity to commercialize that. That there was an interest in the aviation sector, as you might think, aircrafts and volcanic ash do not mix. Remember the KLM event in 1989 from Readout. There's been other close encounters across the globe in the years since 1989. So there's an interest in the aviation sector to have this capability for them to be able to help evaluate the risk to their community and to their environment. So we formed this company from the developed intellectual property at the university, and there was a three-step process to do that. First thing is you do what's called an invention disclosure. So you disclose, this is my invention, this is who funded the work, these are the people that worked on it. From that, that becomes declared intellectual property. And you have a list of inventors. So we had about 30 inventors that had worked on the project over the whole 15 years. These were staff, students, undergraduate, graduate, and faculty. And everybody had their percentage of their work that they put into that as an inventor. And then from that, the university then had the ability to license that technology out into the commercial sector. And as we had the company, we were then able to license that technology and be able to then work with the market to bring revenue in. And then funds then come back to the university, both to the inventors and to the university system through that license agreement. And the inventors get a portion of it, and the university gets a portion as that license revenue increases or continues every year. We also have a couple of projects that I'm going to briefly describe to you through the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. One of them is this grid bridging system, and this is more of a connection to the facilities or the utilities across the state, where ASEP is acting more as a facilitator and connector to it, to these utilities to provide liaison to work on these, basically work on these projects with these groups, using the expertise at the university to help these utilities. It's one example, and Dr. George Rowe, who's here from ASEP, can answer any detailed questions about this. But it's one example where the university is helping existing companies within the state to help evaluate their energy needs. The second example is what's called PUMA, or the pump monitoring apparatus. This is targeted at individuals and householders to look at trends in fuel use, so to optimize and to evaluate when your energy usage is higher than expected. Is it such that doors are being left open accidentally, or windows open that shouldn't be? But how do you track that without having to always be looking at those parts of your property? So therefore, you can say, oh, we're now getting this increase, we're getting this overuse of energy that's unexpected. Okay, now we need a way to be able to stop that, so then we can efficiently use energy, fuel use from these properties. So the aim is obviously savings to house owners, because it's reducing their fuel consumption, and it's making it more optimized for them, and it's bringing new technologies into these smaller communities to help them on reducing the costs. So this is where ASEP is working directly with individual homeowners. So that's just a small overview of some of the commercial capabilities that are going on at the university. And as I said, I'm one example of where academic research can be turned into a company based in Alaska to bring more revenue into Alaska that wouldn't have originally been available just in the university environment. So thank you for the opportunity, and I'll just pass over to Vice Chancellor Hintzman.
I think we have a question, though, first. A couple of questions. Please go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, through the chair. First of all, I'd like to say, having been tangentially involved in this for over 40 years by marriage, that I am so excited what's happening in the state right now, because we have never gotten to this point of first competition and then cooperation I am seeing. And actually, I'm seeing a lot of folks moving to this state and staying here for these reasons, and it makes me very optimistic where we're going. I have one question. Back in the initial presentation, you had $14.7 million in fixed cost. Is that above the administrative cost of your research grants, and what is the university charge for your grants?
So I'm not exactly sure I understand your question. Through the chair, please. I'm not exactly sure I understand your question. So are you talking about the...
I'm sorry, for the record, Dr. Heinzman is speaking.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you talking about the are you talking about the rate of overhead that we charge for to conduct the research?
Right.
Okay. So, yes. So the rate of overhead that we charge depends upon what the source of the funding is. So we do have an agreement with the state of Alaska. So if we are conducting research for the state of Alaska, I believe the rate of overhead is 18%. If we're conducting research for the National Science Foundation, the rate is something like 49.8%. And so it varies depending upon what the source is, what the source allows, typically. That rate of overhead is determined every 3 years through an agreement with the Office of Naval Research. And so we have to negotiate that rate every 3 years.
And is that rate of overhead, does that include, or do you take the fixed costs into that discussion, or are the fixed costs separate?
The fixed costs are part of that discussion in the negotiation with the Office of Naval Research. And so the fixed costs include the fuel costs for the buildings, maintenance, upkeep, janitorial, electrical, all of the costs associated with running a university have to be quantified and then negotiated with ONR.
But this $14.7 million is just what the state pays for fixed costs.
I know what you're talking about now. Yes. So our research program does not pay for all of the university. Only the fixed costs associated with it to execute the research itself. That's all that the overhead can be applied to. And there are many other services provided by the university that we do need and welcome state support for.
Thank you. One other, I just would like you to repeat, because I'm not quite sure if I got it, but you said for the university, we have the most publications of Arctic research in the world?
Yes.
And is that no matter what size of the university we have the most, or is that per capita? I mean, what?
No, that's, yes, we have the most. I wish I had included that slide. We have the largest number of publications any single year, and we've conducted 5-year analyses since the numbers have become available with the recent change in tracking of publications. So for about the last decade, the University of Alaska has been the lead in publications on Arctic research.
And is that including ones that we've partnered with, or is that just SOLE?
No, that includes projects where we become a partner, and we do collaborate with other institutions around the world. And so, but if a University of Alaska researcher was included on the author list, that's included in that publication numbers.
I'd like to see that slide. Thank you.
Surely.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Senator Hughes and then Representative Cobb.
Thank you. Back to the commercialization. Yeah. On page 15, there was a chart that showed an investment of $1.6 million as far as just contributing to the Alaska economy, economic development. This is kind of a big question, and you may not want to pin it down to a number, but just to give us a vision of the potential, or if we were really to go big time into this and make it a very high priority, what is the economic impact into the economy that you think commercialization could have if we're fully ramped up in priority? And so how many dollars of economic impact? And then what would that line need to be in order to do that?
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Hughes. I'm not an economist, and I'm more of a research faculty, so I wouldn't be able to answer that directly here, and I can get that information to you from our director of the Office of Intellectual Property. I think I can probably look at it as the personal connections and the personal growth it would give to the state. It's if we heavily were able and put commercialization and entrepreneurship as even more of a priority than it already is. You saw in the pipeline, it's a large portion of it. It's an area of the Alaskan economy that is, I feel, untapped. I was the first company developed out of university intellectual property, 2013. We're already getting 5 other entrepreneurs kicking in this year that want to do this. And this is just talking from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, University of Alaska Southeast, UAA, even APU, there's an interest to transfer that out of the academic environment. Once these companies form, they can work with larger Alaskan companies, they can work with larger companies outside the state to bring economy in. But I think it's another way to be able to bring people into the state. Bring people in that will stay, bring people in that will form families, that will live here, that will grow the economy, whose children will go to our schools. And they will go from transplants like myself to residents, to citizens, to become the next generation of Alaskans. It's one way to grow our next generation of Alaskans, I think. So that's my personal thoughts on what this would do, but I can get you more of those numbers from our office.
Thank you,
and just a quick follow-up, I appreciate that because I think that would be helpful to us, and I will just want to add to what you're saying. One of the things that really draws me to this is the potential for diversification of our economy, and we all know, particularly with the oil prices where we are, how important that is to the future of our state. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Cobb.
Chair Stevens, may I also respond to that, please?
Please.
Senator Hughes, this is Larry Hensman. It is difficult to quantify, you know, what the consequences are, what the upper limit are. One of the projects that we're working on, one of the businesses that have been recently established through the Center ICE program that Peter was talking about, is a program that was started by Professor Lisa Drew, and that what she has done is She's working with drugs that essentially induce a hibernation, a state of hibernation. She's working with animals such as ground squirrels and mice or bears who do hibernate. And one of the consequences of that is just reducing impacts of trauma. And so the people who have heart attacks or people who are injured on the battlefield, if we can slow their metabolism down, if we can put them into this, you know, essentially hibernetic state, then we can reduce the impacts of damage to the body. And so the treatments then can be added or initiated to help with the recovery process right from the very beginning. And so, you know, the possible consequences are huge, and we don't know really what the returns on that could be. But we've already had interest from the NASA, the National Space Agency, and from the European Space Agency, because they see the value of this through through stasis techniques. And so, I mean, this is a business that developed through the essentially our science of our Arctic science. And so the research is developing here, but the, you know, the sky is the limit on what could come from something like that.
Thank you, Doctor. It's been very edifying to us on research. Historically, our approach in the university system, there was kind of an internal tug of war at times, and it does seem like there's more of a unified approach, which is good for the state as far as nationally and aggressively advocating for funding and projects. And it seems like there will be research, there will be students more attracted to different projects that maybe up in Fairbanks, some the University of Alaska may draw. And I noticed your slide only listed UAF publications and research, and it kind of had that focus. But I know that, like, your UAA program has the Innovate Awards and also brought the National Science Foundation board here the first time ever in Alaska 2 years ago. And so are you looking at a different set of targets and metrics for each research focus at each campus, or how are you kind of making that so that there's synergy versus not synergy?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Larry Hinsman. So absolutely, we are, I think the, first of all, I agree with you 100% that increasing the research capabilities across the state raises all boats, and it helps us all become stronger. We have had really strong collaborations for many, many years. People oftentimes don't see all the collaborations for the competition, but particularly in medical sciences and in fisheries and many other areas, we have had really strong collaborations. Since we've started the strategic pathways efforts, we have invested part of our efforts into trying to quantify those metrics. And so we are working, we have a committee right now working on that, that we are trying to characterize what the metrics are that would allow us for comparison of activities across the whole campus system. And part of that is not necessarily to design where to, you know, who's doing better or what, but it's, you know, where are resources needed, where is the best return on investment, where is the greatest potential for growth, so that we can identify, you know, what's needed, where should we make those investments, where are the growth possibilities the greatest. So I agree with you, we are working on that. And I would encourage you to ask me about that again in a couple of years.
Thank you.
I'll go to Representative Drummond and then Representative Parrish, and we'll get back to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chancellor, I believe you mentioned when Representative Johnston asked about the overhead to the $14.7 million investment, you mentioned agreements with the Naval Office of Research. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
Can you describe that relationship a little bit further? I believe it's the first time we heard that office mentioned in this presentation.
Okay, so through the chair, Slayer Hansman. So the overhead rates that institutions are allowed to charge are a negotiated fee, and that that negotiation depends upon which institution. So the University of Alaska, we have our negotiation process has been through the Office of Naval Research for ever since I've been around, so for 30 or 40 years. That's the ONR has been the agency responsible for our negotiating our overhead rates. And so that is the way those rates are calculated are essentially based upon what the cost of doing business are. And so the rates of overhead, actually, if you have newer buildings, if you have greater facilities costs that you need to support, then those rates of overhead go up. As those buildings are eliminated, as the fuel costs go down, those rates of overhead go down too. And so it's a very detailed process that we have to go through to provide the evidence, the quantify the costs of every aspect of doing research that we go through. And then there is a negotiation with ONR as far as what they will allow and what they say is not allowable, or what should be redirected to a different entity. And so it's the standard process that every university has to go through. Every university that has federal projects must go through that negotiation process. Not all of them with ONR, but for some reason, and I don't know what this history, for some reason, the University of Alaska, our oversight entity is the Office of Naval Research.
Absolutely fascinating. Thank you. I'll stop there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair. The areas that you have focused on in your presentation, growing your world-class research for a $3.7 million increment over the base operating budget and contribute to Alaska's economic development at a $1.6 million mm-hmm. increment over the governor's budget, the base operating budget. Those are what you focused the bulk of your presentation on, but there's about another $19 million in the Board of Regents budget request. Can you speak to the impact if we were to say just give the $5.3 million increment? What would you still be able to pull the full benefit from the $5.3 million increment, or would utilities costs, facilities maintenance, et cetera, the other components of the plan interfere, underfunding the other components, would that interfere with your mission?
And so I don't know exactly what you're looking at. I don't have the budget committed to memory, and so what I can.
You're looking at a slide.
Sorry.
Yeah, slide 15.
Okay. Okay, so, oh, I see. Okay.
3.7 and 6.1.
Okay, so, these are all actually different components of the budget for a different justification. So if I could just take apart the growing the world class research. So there are many components to that. And so one of those components is ADAC, is the Arctic Domain Awareness Center. Now that's a research program out of the University of Alaska Anchorage. The primary customer for that is the primary sponsor is the Department of Homeland Security. The primary customer is the Coast Guard, U.S. Coast Guard. So the purpose of this unit is to enable the Coast Guard to be more functional in the Arctic. The Coast Guard is very well-equipped, well-experienced to work in the North Pacific, but they're not really capable of working, of responding to all the needs that we have now up in the Arctic as far as there is. One of the projects that they're doing now is to how to unload cruise ships. If they have an emergency, how can you unload a cruise ship rapidly, and then what do you do with the people? That's part of what they're working on right now. So unfortunately, this particular ADAC, that program, does not have any base funding. They only have the support that they need from the Department of Homeland Security. And as you know, research programs come and go like this. And so there needs to be some kind of base funding to keep that entity whole and intact. And so that would be, you know, if that whole, whatever it is, if that $3.7 million were not provided, then some of those programs are going to be lost. As far as these other activities on here, as far as the engineering building costs, much of our work is the research activities are conducted in the engineering building. That is a new building that is not fully functional at this point. It does not have all of the resources that are needed, all the equipment, all the even some of the teaching supplies. It is very new, and so to maintain our research program in that particular area, then that we need that kind of support for there too. Utilities, I think it's relatively easy to understand the essence of why we need the utility support. That's we do have a new power plant that is developing, but utility costs continue to go up for various reasons. So the budget is very, very integrated. We do, I will say that I think that the resources brought in through research do benefit the other components of the campus, but it goes both ways. You know, the university is an integrated whole, and we need all of the components to maintain our status as a fully functional university capability. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. Well, this has been fascinating, and I apologize. I have to leave for another meeting here in a few minutes, but and I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to talk to Dr. Rowe. I'd like to hear more about his project, which really has a direct effect on everyone in Alaska. So let's go to Representative Johnson's question.
Yeah, just a quick question, follow up to the representative. Grumman. I think it'd be interesting for this group to have the size of DOD grants that are coming into the university. I think we've seen an uptick in that, and maybe even a breakdown of what the DOD grants are going for, Department of Defense. And then I was in a meeting in January that there seemed to be someone made the comment that maybe ONR might not be the administrator of our grants, that it would be shifting, and I didn't know if you'd heard that, and this could be from somebody that really had no clue, but.
Through the chair, I guess. Thank you, Representative Johnson. So I do not, I'm not involved in the negotiation of those overhead rates, and so there may be something that there's lots of things I don't know. So, yeah. But I do want to add, respond to your comment about DOD. So it is remarkable as far as the DOD has identified the Arctic as an area of heightened strategic importance. And so there's an incredible amount of activity going on right now. So the Department of Defense has invited us to a workshop in May in New Hampshire, where they want to identify what they need to learn, what capabilities they need to develop to respond better in the Arctic. The Air Force is holding a similar meeting in Seattle in May, and they've also invited us to participate. And so the Navy established an Arctic roadmap maybe 10 years ago, and it's been refined every year since then. But the Navy still doesn't operate in the Arctic, except for its submarine capabilities.
And I think, isn't there also a partnership with Hawaii?
In many respects, yes. So we have a really strong partnership, particularly with respect to development and application of drones. So that's been a partnership we're really proud of.
Anyways, if there were a slide on that, I'm sure everybody would be interested in it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Representative Tallarico.
Madam Chair, I wonder if we might have an opportunity to get Dr. Rowe to come up and potentially go through some of these bullet points on page 19. Energy and reliability are a huge issue, I think, particularly what might be the cost driver and what he might see in the future for the Center for Energy and Power.
Welcome, Dr. Rowe. If you'd name an affiliation, put yourself on the record and go ahead.
Very good. So for the record, it's Mr. George Rowe, not doctor. Don't have a PhD yet. I am with the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. I actually am a 36-year veteran of the Boeing Company. I came to Alaska because of the potential for working on resilient energy systems that are very aligned with what modern aerospace is doing. If you fly on a 787 or other platform, you are flying on an electrical grid that has all the functionality of the communities of Alaska and made by the same organizations. So we have huge opportunities for helping not just ourselves but others as we make systems that are reliable and resilient. I have worked directly on some of the DOD contracting, of course, at Boeing, but here we've brought in a little over $5 million in the last 2 years from the Office of Naval Research, which has actually been used to support, beyond that, another $500,000 that we've used with Launch Alaska and other organizations that are helping us with the larger ecosystem. In aerospace, there's no such thing as a standalone element. You need a system. And I believe that that's the same thing with the state of Alaska, that we need to work together as an organization, because we're up against pretty challenging things, and we need to learn from one another, not repeat. So that the grid bridging system that you see here, this is a direct request from the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative to help them integrate renewable energy more effectively and reduce diesel consumption. They have 59 different communities that they represent, and there's huge opportunities for replicating and scaling this to other communities. One of the things that I am particularly interested in is the rail belt energy system, because we have in the state of Alaska nested, intertied, standalone systems that are completely representative of the continental grid in the lower 48. And we can be a test bed for evaluating and determining and developing the systems that the nation needs, so that when events happen, whether they're human caused or nature caused, we can stand up responses quickly and minimize the compromise that results. And I believe that Alaska can be, as Senator Murkowski refers us to, the living laboratory for many different aspects of the nation's needs. So I'm really excited about the opportunity to work in this particular area. The other thing that I will say background-wise is I worked in unmanned systems, both underwater and flying systems when I was at Boeing. And I believe that that is a huge growth opportunity for the state. And I believe it is an on-ramp that is compelling to young people, that will help with the STEM education aspects, as is energy as well, to help them develop skills and find homes that jobs that will help them stay in their homes and support their families. And beyond the money that I think the university needs to do this kind of work, I really think that we need to be looking carefully at the communities of our state to make sure we're building local capacity so that the students have the capability, that the communities have what they need to take advantage of. If we can make energy more affordable, if we can build this kind of innovation culture, make sure they've got what it takes to be able to establish the businesses, grow them out, et cetera. So I think there's so much we can do together.
Any further questions? We're all good? All right.
Thank you.
Any closing statements, gentlemen?
Yes, thank you very much for your consideration and your time. We appreciate your support for the University of Alaska. I will, again, emphasize that research helps drive the economy. It increases the diversification of our economic activities. Provides a talented and capable workforce, and it's essential, as our president keeps saying, a great state needs a great university. So thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your presentation today. Any additional comments or questions from the committee? All right. Next meeting of the House Education Committee will be Monday, February 26th at 8 a.m. We will be hearing public testimony and amendments to House Bill 212, REAA and Small Muni School District Fund, and House Bill 233, Education Tax Credits, Sunset and Repeals. Seeing no further business before us, we are adjourned at 8:59 a.m.